get on down.
And we're back with the Rule of Three. I'm Tim Slagle.
And I'm Brian Miller.
And I had an interesting weekend this week.
Yes, tell me about it.
I worked the historic Holly Hotel. It's in Holly, Michigan. It's a really interesting place. They've been doing comedy there probably close to 40 years.
And that's about as long as comedy has been done on the circuit for the most part, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's at least 35, maybe 40. I was talking with one of the managers. She wasn't exactly sure what year they started doing comedy.
Wow. So probably would have been sometime in the 80s, maybe?
Yeah. Well, yeah. She said that they've that it's been open for 37 as a restaurant, and that she thinks that it was about 35 years they've been doing comedy. It was about 2 years before they started doing comedy there. It's
in the Midwest. That's about as doesn't go back a whole lot farther than that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a Victorian hotel that was built in Holly, Michigan. It was kind of right across the street from the train track, so it was kind of a railroad stop. I don't know why you would stop in Holly. I don't know why you wouldn't just sit on the train, but apparently some people did. And downstairs there's like a wine cellar in the basement of the hotel, and they started doing comedy there. Like I said, in the 80s, they've been doing it ever since. And it's a really interesting room because it feels like a basement.
As many great comedy clubs do.
Yeah, all the best comedy clubs are in the basement. I hate to diss anybody that you know spent a lot of money building one in a strip mall. But
it's going to be the best club ever because it's three stories tall.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yes. And we have skyboxes and a jumbotron.
What's interesting is like the Helium in Portland is on the second floor, but they have very smartly sort of created a basement on the second floor. I mean, it's a perfect space. They've done a great job with it. But it's, you know, you the best thing you can say about it is you would never know you're on the second floor.
Yeah, exactly. If you're going to go on the second floor, make it the interior look like the Wayne's World set.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I mean it's perfect. They do a great job there.
So that, and even even if you can actually make the entrance from the third floor, so that people have to go down the stairs.
The physical descent is important. You know, it's kind of a whole Hades thing.
Yeah, you kind of want that. You kind of want that Disneyland aspect that really makes you think that you're on a steamboat in the African jungle.
Yeah, or your Euripides going on the long hike. So you go down to the basement, the wine cellar.
I want to go back to Euripides on the long hike. I have no idea what you just said.
Oh, I believe it's Euripides was the I'm always mixing up my myths, but I believe a Greek myth of the guy who has to go down into hell to rescue his wife. I forget who wrote it. I know just enough to know Euripides and not enough to remember who wrote Euripides.
Got it. Okay. It just seemed like a weird attraction at Disneyland.
The Euripides ride.
But you were actually like two thoughts back.
Yes. Often it.
And I have to admit, I am just totally ignorant of my mythology. And all I knew about Euripides was the joke.
What's the joke?
Yeah, what did he say to his tailor? Euripides, you Mendides.
I was afraid I wasn't going to get that one, and it turned out there was no danger.
Yeah, absolutely no danger. But mythology with no education required.
That's my kind of mythology.
So anyway... So they've had some amazing for a little place that seats, I don't even know if they can stick 100 in there, and I don't even know the way they get people get crowded in.
Mm-hmm.
I can't help but wonder if Holly, Michigan doesn't have any fire codes, because it's people are in there shoulder to shoulder, just crammed in there, and when the room's on fire, it just, you know, there's no place for the laughter to go, so it just explodes.
You're using a lot of terms the fire marshal would be uncomfortable with. Well, there was so much laughter, they all ran for the door, and they started crushing each other with their giggles, and 74 dead.
There actually is, yeah, there actually is an exit onto the street, now that I think about it. So there is an emergency exit. I don't know if it's the door's rusted shut or not. But anyway, what makes the hotel, well, there's a couple things that make the hotel interesting. Number one was that during the pre-Prohibition era, Holly was one of the places where everybody would go to get drunk.
Sure, hotel, that makes sense.
Right, but it's, I mean, the actual city. I don't know what it was about the city. I don't know if they had loose liquor regulations. I don't know if there was some sort of industry in the area that attracted people who would drink after their shift. But it was...
It was the Laughlin of Michigan.
Yeah, it kind of had a Hell on Wheels aspect to it. It was rowdy, and apparently the hotel is that Carrie Nation came in there with her Temperance Society, and took her axe to the bar at one point.
What a charmer she was, by the way. Literally, how bad can it be? What are you famous for in history? Buzzkill. I'm basically the biggest buzzkill in all of history. You know where people are having fun? I just bum it out. I just bum it all out. Put me on a quarter.
But lately, their claim to fame at the hotel is that they're haunted.
Ah.
And it's there is an interesting point. There are two points in history when the hotel burned down. It's been rebuilt twice, and both times occurred exactly 100 years apart.
Wow.
It was like in 1875 and in 1975 on the exact same date.
So we theoretically are good for a little while.
Yeah,
if the pattern holds.
I would think.
Tell the fire marshal it's okay downstairs. We've still got solid 50 years before we have to start worrying.
Fire marshal checks in once every 100 years. That's
when they say it's haunted, I mean, are there supposed to be, you know, people feel a presence or they see a thing or what's, you know?
I believe that they had a ghost hunter come in. And he actually his like meters went off the scale.
You know, I couldn't believe in ghost hunting less, even though I'm not necessarily opposed to the paranormal notion of the paranormal. And the reason I don't believe in ghost hunters is, isn't it a coincidence that all these meters and this ghost hunting stuff got popular when the kids who watch Ghostbusters turned old enough to buy electronic equipment? You watch this movie in 1984, and they're looking into all these gadgets going, oh, the readings are off the charts, Egon. Call Bill Murray. We got to take care of this. And then they all turn 25, and they're like, I think I invented a thing now.
I've been doing comedy there since it's been open. And it's got some, it's got, like I said, Tim Allen used to work there a lot. Soupy Sales was there.
Wow.
Pat Paulson was there. It's an amazing, and I'm sure a lot of other names that, you know, names that I know, but I forget how many of those are recognizable to the general populace.
Sure. It would be great if it was haunted by all the old acts who didn't do very well.
Well, that's actually the realization that I came to, is that I think it's me setting off the meters. I think I am actually the ghost of the Holly Hotel. It's I died on stage there about 30 years ago.
You know,
and once a year I'm seen roaming the halls late at night, looking for my career.
You're kind of pale. You walk slowly. You know, I can see it. It's like the Sixth Sense. Am I the only one who can see you, Tim, when you come to Acme this whole time? I've never paid attention.
I could be a ghost of Acme too, because I think I've been haunting that basement longer than anyone else.
What a great fate, though. You know, like if you had to have an afterlife and you have to be a ghost and you have to be like in The Shining, the ghosts who stay at the hotel, just put me in a decent room and then I'll just think I'm doing a show and I'll be the confused ghost who's always hurrying to a show. That sounds all right to me.
And speaking of hurrying, We're coming up quickly on a break.
Yeah, we'll see you back in the next segment.
Bye. Hi, I'm Tim Slagle, and you're listening to The Rule of Three. And over on the other side,
that's Brian Miller.
Hey, it's if you were listening to the last segment, and why wouldn't you have been, you noticed that we were talking about a haunted hotel. Well, we decided that since this is October and we're talking about curses anyway, that there is probably nothing more cursed since Victorian times, since the Chicago Cubs.
Yeah, absolutely. I've always been a Cubs fan even before I lived in Chicago. And I mean, that was the attraction to me. I mean, I suppose that my defeatism comes through in that, but it's always, you can't help but root for him. It's, you know, sweet, sweet pain to root for the Cubs.
It's, I think they're probably the most popular team in America.
I would think so. Yeah. I mean, I lived in Chicago for 4 years and pretty near Wrigley. So I used to go a lot. I don't know if they still do, but you used to be able to, with a student ID, you could get into all the day games for the first 2 months for like $5 or something. So I would just go do my homework at Wrigley. It's like, well, if you got to sit out and do something, bring a book, you know, watch the Cubs.
You actually lived in Wrigleyville?
Yeah, I lived in Lincoln Park, but kind of on the Wrigleyville side of it. So I would just walk over there. It's a couple miles, you know?
Yeah, no, it's not far, but I never really understood the fascination with living in Wrigleyville.
You should live near Wrigleyville and walk over there. I live in
Lincoln Park.
Gorgeous.
Makes a lot of sense. I actually, for some women, this is going to sound horrible, but I always notice that kind of somewhat hefty, unattractive women like to live in Wrigleyville.
I never noticed that, but I never didn't notice it.
and I came to the realization that there is no woman so unattractive that the right amount of liquor will make her attractive to a guy.
Well, then Wrigleyville's the place to go.
Exactly.
It is exactly.
Because in Wrigleyville, there is any hour of the day, any day of the week, you're gonna, no matter who you are, there is a guy in Wrigleyville that's at the proper state to find you attractive.
That is absolutely true. And like I always would tell people, like, you don't want to live in the party house. You want to visit the party house and then come back to your quiet house. And that was actually what living next to Wrigleyville was like. You know, we walk over to Wrigleyville, we get hammered. Come back to my nice tree-lined Lincoln Park street. Sleep in my overpriced studio.
But anyway, to get back to the original thing, is the Cubs are now in the National League playoffs.
Yeah, which I thought was interesting. They clinched a playoff series for the first time at home ever.
First time at home ever?
I believe it was the first time they'd ever done it at home. Because the playoffs used to be a little less expansive, and so they added the division series a pretty long time ago, even in baseball terms. But the Cubs have been so bad for so long that they've only clinched it one other time, and it was away.
Huh.
So the curse is now. The other time the Cubs got to this far in the series was, as I think we've talked about on a couple of podcasts, the. Ended up in the notorious Steve Bartman foul ball catch game where I, a longtime Cubs fan, was rendered into a sputtering mob monster and, you know, pitchfork-wielding Wrigleyvilleite. Wrigleyville is actually exactly the sort of place that you would think a drunken mob, like in the Simpsons, the mob always forms, like in the kind of parody of the Frankenstein mob. Wrigleyville is exactly where a drunken mob would form every time.
Well, actually, what's interesting is no matter what the sport is,
mm-hmm.
that's the mob forms in Wrigleyville.
Yeah, they start there. We've got to go riot in L.A. Let's start here and walk, fellows.
Yeah, it's when every time the Blackhawks win, everyone goes to Wrigleyville.
that's perfect.
I guess it could have something to do with the Cubs record that it's so pathetic. That it's kind of like you know, it's almost like if you win a running win a trophy for track, you go to your friend who's paralyzed to show off the trophy. It really doesn't make any logical sense, but that's what people do. I guess the idea is that Wrigleyville is just the place that they have the infrastructure for cleaning up the vomit, perhaps.
Yeah, they have vomit drains built into the thing.
They have the vomit sewers.
They actually just, hose the streets off with old style just to go ahead and... But, you know, I think the reaction to that Steve Bartman game and the fervor around the Cubs, like, the reason people got mad about that one so much was that it did feel like it wasn't that Steve Bartman had caught the ball or all these other things. It was, people were reacting against the curse, don't you think? I mean, it was the gut reaction against the kind of superstitious caveman inside us that's like, no, evil forces.
Yeah, you touched the ball. It's, you know, and there's also the curse of the goat. That's another curse that's been, that the goat was banned.
And it was the owner of the Billy Goat Tavern, right?
I believe so, yeah.
Because he would bring his
apparently
pet Billy
he
goat.
Put some sort of curse, and they said some sort of gypsy curse, some sort, just touched the cheek of the coach and said, loser.
You know, it's interesting that the baseball is such a weird, quirky, old-fashioned sport that it would not surprise me. It's actually more surprising to me that goats can't sit in the stadium. You know, where like you'd be in the stadium and like, why are these goats here? It's like, oh, you can't bring a dog or a cat in, but everybody knows you can bring a goat into a baseball game. They put that in the rule books back in 05. Baseball is the weirdest. You know, it's charming in that way, but it's so rooted in tradition, and people who are into it are so opposed to any changes that it's become this very weird. Speaking of antiques, you know, I mean, the whole game of baseball is kind of a.
Well, yeah. Well, Wrigley Field is an antique. It's probably one of the. Is there an older park in the major league?
Is Fenway older? Maybe.
I do not know.
But I've been to Fenway and Wrigley both, and
but
that's
pretty
amazing.
Much it anymore, isn't it? I mean, everyone else is.
Yeah, I think every other stadium is a new stadium. Those are the only two even remotely comparable parks I've been to. Well, I guess, you know, Soldier Field, it's been added on to a lot, but it is still Soldier Field.
Right.
But there's no charm to Soldier Field. You know, there's no, it's off there by the lake and the highway and the airy theater, and it's just kind of, eh.
Well, if you know Chicago, they stuck a stadium inside of Soldier Field. They wanted a modern stadium, so they just built it inside of it. So it looks like it now looks like a UFO landed in Soldier Field.
Yeah, and I like it. I've seen some good games and concerts there, but it, you know, Wrigley has the charm, which, you know, it's perfect. Like a good haunted house, you have to have the kind of seductive, you know, lady ghost or some kind of presence to lure you in, so that then the haunt, you know. You get crushed. The spirits come down on you. You know, if there was no charm to Wrigley, the curse couldn't be very effective.
Huh?
It's like the sirens calling him to the cliff. You know, you go, I'm gonna root for the Cubs because this is it. When they win, I'll revel in their glory. You know,
that is a good point though. That it actually is the selling point of Wrigley Field is that it is an accursed ballpark.
Yeah, it's a haunted stadium.
And there's evidence of it. You can go and see evidence of the curse at any game.
Yeah, it bubbles back.
Until this year, which means probably if they actually do win the series this year, there's going to be two things. Number one, there's going to be suspicion that Spielberg paid them off to throw the game. Everyone else off to throw the game.
Right, to make the – because I don't know if you're referencing the Back to the Future thing, I'm assuming, right?
Yeah, correct.
Which is crazy, yeah, that they – in Back to the Future, they predict that the Cubs win the series in 2015. It's nuts.
It's right, but you know, that would be an incredible tie-in. You know, almost – I mean, there was suspicion. I mean, tie-ins have gotten so – people are so leery of them and suspicious that people were thinking that the discovery of water on Mars was NASA getting paid off.
To pimp the Martian. I know, I heard that. People were like, just some tie-in. That is pretty crazy. Marketing has gotten in. But, you know, real quick before the end of the segment, how far do you think the Cubs are going to go? Do you think they overcome the curse, or do you think the curse stays strong?
You know, I think what's going to happen is the same thing that happened on September 11th, is New York won, and I think there was no will for other teams to beat New York that season. And I think the same thing's going to happen this year. I think there's no will to beat the Cubs.
I like that. I'm going to go with that. The curse is going to be over.
And
you heard it here first.
So is this segment. I'm Tim Slagle.
I'm Brian Miller.
Hi, you're listening to The Rule of Three. This is our third segment. I'm Tim Slagle.
And I'm Brian Miller. And we're back here for a little hot Walking Dead talk. I think as we promised last show, we were going to talk about the premiere of The Walking Dead was on this Sunday. And now, Tim, did you do your homework?
No, I did not do. Speaking of spoilers, no, I did not do my homework. I thought I had it. For some reason, I thought I had another day before we had to watch the season premiere so we could talk about it. So I guess we're not going to be able to talk. And don't spoil it, okay?
This would be great, though. We can have the easiest spoiler-free discussion ever because you don't even know what there is to spoil. I could, for all you know, I could make this episode really interesting for you. I could give you a bunch of fake spoilers, and you'd just be waiting. You spend the whole episode going like, God, I can't believe Carl was murdered so brutally in front of his whole family. And you're just being like, have you ever done that? Have you ever had a misapprehension of a movie, or like you thought you knew something that happened in a movie? And then you're watching it and you realize that it wasn't, and you just spent the whole time waiting for the shoe to drop.
Yeah, you know what? Somebody did that to me. Somebody gave me a fake spoiler. And it was like, oh, you pulled one on me. And I'm sitting there saying, oh, this is it. It's really going to happen. And no, it didn't. And I can't remember what it was. I know it was recent, but yeah, somebody fed me a fake spoiler.
It's actually a better prank than a real spoiler if you want to mess with somebody, because a real spoiler, you can still enjoy it. You're like, okay, that's going to happen, but you're watching the thing organically. But a fake spoiler, the longer it goes, the more – when this has happened to me, the longer it goes, the more you're like, man, I think this thing's about over, but – I mean, how are they going to – it seems like they're not even heading in that direction at all right now. You can't enjoy the thing. You're just trying to figure out how they're going to get from here to Carl got eaten or whatever. You know, you're like, and then the credits roll. And what the heck? Carl, what the
– And you get the same you get the same joy as a real spoiler because you're going to say, why did you tell me that? Why did you ruin that for me? I can't believe you did that. I hate spoilers. I'm never talking to you about anything again. And then they come back and it's like you – yeah, you get it twice.
And now, essentially, Walking Dead is a show that, for the most part, I don't have cable. I've never paid for cable in my entire life. I've never had it. And I usually watch shows on DVD or Netflix, you know, sometimes a little bit after the fact. But I buy the Walking Dead episodes on iTunes and watch them immediately because I think this is the hardest show in America to not have spoiled for you, even if you're kind of staying out of the way.
Huh. You know, that's it is Walking Dead. Walking Dead had a reputation when it first started as being the show that you didn't really know if people were going to survive. It was such a shock. And I think it was probably the first show like that is that pretty much when any show gets established, you know that, you know, as far back as Bonanza. You know that little Joe is going to get out of the Indian camp, you know, and I'm talking way before your time.
You know that
little Joe is going to fall in love with is going to die by the end of the episode because
Little Joe has to be
single for most plot lines on Bonanza to work. So.
And even in modern TV, it's like you're like, well, if their contract expires, they'll do a very special episode, and then they'll do something. But Walking Dead would just be like savagely remove a character in an unexpected moment.
Yeah, MASH actually did that with Colonel Blake.
Right, they seem like they're giving him the send off.
Yeah,
and then they pull the rug out from under you.
And that, you know, and I think that was McClane Stevenson. I can't even. Boy, I hope I got that right. I think he was such a jerk because he had become the standout star of that and, you know, got all the attention. He was the Chevy Chase of MASH, so to speak, that they did that on purpose. That they said,
yeah, I think they did it so he could never come back.
Right, exactly. And he didn't, he probably didn't even know they were doing it.
Yeah, they're like, hey, just hop on this helicopter and we'll see you later. Yeah, it's a very sobering moment of MASH, actually. And, you know, it's very heavy when they
And they never did it again. Is that if you followed MASH, I think Alan Alda, he went crazy in the last episode. I think he should have never regained his sanity. I think they should have Blaked him.
Interesting.
I was very disappointed because everyone was saying, you know, oh my gosh, this is the series that killed off Colonel Blake. So you don't know what they're going to do in the last episode. And no, they didn't nothing. But if Alan Alda would have lost it and never recovered and ended up in a padded room the rest of his life, that would have been on a par.
It would have made a statement, that's for sure.
And that's what I'm going to say about The Walking Dead right here, is that originally you didn't know who was going to get whacked, but right now it's some of these characters are so established. Rick is there. Rick is always going to get out.
And Carl, because if Carl dies, Rick would rather die than have Carl die.
Exactly.
I think Rick and Carl are. Rick might die by the end of the show, but I do agree with you that he and Carl have gotten in that protective bubble in a way. But almost none of the other characters, I don't think are.
Oh, no, Daryl's there.
Yeah, that's true. Because who would even want to watch the? I mean, I would really lose interest in that show significantly without Daryl. I really would.
Yeah, absolutely. Daryl is there, and you think Daryl's really bald in real life? I think he is.
Yeah, that hair has gotten pretty. It keeps getting longer. I'm dubious of all.
What's funny to me about Daryl's hair is it's supposed to look unkempt, but it really looks very, very kempt. It looks like
it's very styled. Yeah,
it looks like a black Joey Heatherton wig.
Are you partial, especially partial to anybody on Walking Dead?
You know what? I'm not anymore. I liked the show for a number of seasons, but at this point, Greg's got to go. That's the Asian, right?
Glenn,
that's right. Glenn's got to stay.
I don't know. You know, I did a show with him one time, by the way. Steven Yeun is his name.
Uh huh.
A really, really funny guy. Really funny. Huh. Yeah, terrific actor. I really like that guy a lot.
I think he might be in that Captain Kirk and Scotty circle.
I hope so. I'm a big fan. I'm a big Carol guy. I mean, I think she could definitely get killed, but I think she's the most interesting character on the show.
Yeah, she's not. She's
got a full arc, you know. When you think back when that show started and she was the mousy wallflower and she was kind of boring. I was just kind of waiting for her to die. Like I was so assumed she would die. But it took me a while to even notice she was still around. And then she became this kind of flinty, intense, post-apocalyptic survivor. I really like it.
I was watching a making of the Hell on Wheels. Doesn't really matter if you've seen the show or not. But I believe that's what it was. And one of the actresses said that it was pretty much what everybody would do when the day's scripts would come out, is that everyone would go to the end and see if they survived.
Oh, sure. I'm sure that on Walking Dead, that would be upsetting. I mean, as a comic... As a comic, you don't have to worry while you're on stage that somebody's going to come on and go like, oh, I'm sorry, the writers have decided that your set is now over. Like, but I felt like I still had a lot to go.
I would guess, Game of Thrones probably has it too. Because Game of Thrones, I think, more than any other show is you really don't know.
Unless you're – with the books, if you read the books, there was a lot of characters that you were kind of knew were going to go. But now that they've transcended that and they've moved past the books, I'm sure those guys are sweating every dime.
Which is kind of funny. George Martin's jumping up and down on his trampoline and they go, they can't finish it without me.
I think they can. And I think they're gonna.
I'm sorry, Mr. Martin. You don't know Hollywood.
I think that's going to be – I was reading those books for many years and it's going to be a bummer that I'm going to see the end on the show, and I'm not going to go back and read those 1,000-page books when I know what happened. I'm just going to – that sounds like the most boring thing in the world to me.
I could see that, because picking them up in the first place would seemed like the most boring thing in the world to me.
Yeah, I got pulled in. You know, I did get pulled in, and it's not usually my thing. I used to read the Walking Dead comic books as well. I stopped that because I was like, you know, I just like the show. I just enjoy watching the show, and I want to be surprised.
Huh.
So yeah. So we'll tell you what. Maybe we'll do a little catch up next week. We'll do like a half segment of Walking Dead, and we'll catch up with the fresh two as way we continue our Halloween themed couple of episodes.
And that's the end of this episode. You can catch me on timslegel.com.
And you can catch me at brianmillercomedy.com. That's Brian with a Y. And at bmillercomedy on Twitter.
Thanks for listening.